You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Archaeotech Podcast, episode 87. I'm your host, Chris Webster, with my co-host, Paul Zimmerman. Today, we get things done using apps and workflows that won't slow you down. Let's get to it. All right, welcome to the Archaeotech Podcast, episode 87, as I mentioned in the introduction. And Paul, how are you doing today?
Doing all right, I think. We're recording this in late August, and we're coming up to the end of summer. And as I've mentioned many times before, I work at a school, and I do IT. And we have to get everything all up and running and ready for the new school year. So this is crunch time for us, which is, you know, perfect, I think, for what our today's topic is going to be.
Yeah. So we're talking about not just workflow stuff, but tools to help organize all the things that you need to do. And I can imagine for you, Paul, you've got a deadline that is here's when school starts, but you probably have deadlines prior to that where teachers are coming in, they need their stuff ready to go, things are happening, and you've got all these pieces that have to happen on this timeline. And that's no different than project management. Any project management. I don't care if it's archaeology or, you know, building a car. You start with a timeline with a deadline, and the deadline is this thing has to be done by this time. And there's many deadlines in between there that have to be met, and there's supplies that have to be gathered. There's, you know, assets that have to be used and deliverables and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, let's talk about that, because in our current digital lifestyles, I honestly don't think a paper calendar really cuts it anymore. We're dealing with too big of things. There's too much money on the line in a lot of cases, and there's too much at stake to be just be relying on a paper calendar that you might leave at home one day or leave in your car, and then you don't have it. And I know so many people in archaeology that still use paper calendars that it's actually shocking to me. Now, if it's an enhancement, you know, like a supplement to your digital calendar setup and whatever you're using, then sure, that's fine. Maybe you take notes in it, you know, that's cool. But if that's your only way to keep track of appointments, I applaud you that you can even do that. But second, you know, I just don't know that it's the best way to do things just from a peace of mind standpoint, because every single one of these things we're going to talk about, for me, they help take something out of my brain. So something else externally is assisting me in remembering something. And that might make it sound like I'm the freaking president of the United States, but we're all busy people. And anytime you could remove one little thing from your brain, whether it's remembering to do something or just some detail about something, if you can get that out, it just frees up space to do other things and eliminates that possibility with these high stakes projects of you forgetting it or getting the details wrong or something like that. So that's what I want to talk about. And, you know, I was just at a Civil Air Patrol conference and we were talking about productivity and getting things done. The Civil Air Patrol is 60,000 volunteers that are actually managing a pretty expensive list of equipment, and we have a pretty high responsibility, and zero people are getting paid. So, you know, there's no money on the line when it comes to that, but lives are on the line, which is really crazy. And we have all these things that require us to do. Like as a squadron commander, I have to go through these trainings. I have 73 people in my squadron that I have to manage and make sure that their training is up to date. And we're getting the search and rescue stuff dialed in, any new tools that come online. And guess what? Oh yeah, we all have full-time jobs. So it's like, how do you manage all these things that you have to get done? So we started kind of geeking out on that.
Archaeotech podcast here, and we'll bring it back to the archaeology as much as we can, but everybody, regardless mm-hmm. of what they do for a living, is feeling the same sort of constraint right now, just as, you know, scrambling to get everything right. Done. There's, you know, technology is great. It brings in all sorts of new things that we can do, but it seems like it means that we have less downtime, less time away from the office, because somebody can always text or email you and you get that wherever you are. So you and I both make fairly extensive use of a variety of different tools to try to mitigate that problem, to actually use tech to mm-hmm. fight the overabundance of the tech, right? And like you said, get things out of right. our mind, which is, I'm glad that you use that phrase, because you and I hadn't discussed that before, but that's how I always try to think of it. I just want to get all the stuff out of my brain and into some sort of system that will remind me or that I know to check on my own. That just as an assistant. So I don't have to sit there and think through and remember and categorize and catalog and schedule everything up in my noggin, because frankly, I'm no good at that without the without these technical tools that we have at our disposal. So do you want to just jump in on some of the tools of the particular workflows? Or do you want to talk a little more generally about some of the constraints within contract archaeology?
Well, yeah, let's do what you said second there and talk about some of the I want to talk about some of the constraints of using these tools, you know, for your projects and contract archaeology, stuff like that, because I think some people tend to get overwhelmed by all the things that they do have available to them. I mean, you look up productivity tools on the App Store, whatever device you use, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things on there, probably thousands when you get down and really into the weeds.
Probably the second biggest category beside games.
Sure, which tells you something. People are hungry for it. Like, they really want something that works, right? But that also tells me another thing is if I look at like the top 10 productivity apps, you know, one or two of those might really hit my buttons, you know, like they say from a visual standpoint or a how many clicks do I have to take to do something standpoint, or how does it integrate with my other tools standpoint. It's going to fit into my life in a different way than some of the others are, and it's going to be better for me. And sometimes you just have to try these things out to see whether or not they're going to work, because that's the two things I see as the biggest problem while we're talking about all this. Is we're going to bring up, we've got a list of probably 10 plus things here that we're going to talk about, but you can't use all of them, right? You can't use all of them. You're going to use some of them, and you're going to find this workflow that really works for you. And it's going to involve maybe two or three like high level organizational things with a couple little ancillary things that you might bring in occasionally. And because if you bring in too much, A, you're going to need an organizer to organize your organizers. And that's insane. And then B, you get something that's kind of known in the business as notification paralysis or notification desensitivity, where you set up all these notifications to happen so you are reminded of things, but so many notifications come through from so many different places that you just shut down. You just ignore them. That's happened to me. It happens to me a lot until I get something dialed in, right? And so you got to really, really manage that. It could be the perfect tool for the job, but it's just sending you too many notifications. And you know, maybe in a certain time, you need all those notifications, like when it's coming to crunch time. But most of the time, you just want it to tell you the important things, and then you can go to the system for the other things, you know, stuff like that. So that's my biggest challenge with all this stuff is managing what I'm going to use. And if I bring something new into the system, then I'm probably getting rid of something else, you know, once I really get it dialed in. And I think I've got my system pretty well dialed in for the stuff I use. So yeah. Anyway, let's jump right into, I think, calendars. It's the first thing I wrote down because it's probably one of the most important things is having some sort of calendar system that really helps you organize your life and everything that you're doing. Paul, what's your basic calendar?
Our basic calendar is a Google Calendar. Years ago, I got my own domain name, lugal.com, and Google was giving away for a while Google Apps for businesses for free. So I've been grandfathered under that. So I've got a Google domain. You don't need to have your own Google domain, but I do. And I use it for my family. So my entire family has lugal.com email addresses, and we all have our lugal.com calendars that we can share amongst each other. You can do that. You don't need to have your own domain, but it meant that I had a certain stake in using the Google's tool set. So my wife, my kids, and I all have our own calendars. Our main calendar, where things go in that pertain to just one of us, you know, so we have certain events get put into shared calendars. I have in my Google Calendar, I have a work calendar that I don't share with anybody, but our main calendars are all shared amongst each other. And when I started doing that, I really wanted the perfect system. And one thing that really bothered me is like, oh, how do I avoid having a million different calendars? And how do I also avoid having duplicates? You know, the same event that is in my son's calendar and in my calendar, because I have to take him to it.
Right.
And I was talking with one of my coworkers, and he said, why? You want to know that you have that event. Don't worry about the duplicates. And, you know, that was tough for me. That was really tricky, but I got over it. And so now, you know, I have very few duplicates actually in our shared calendar, but I can look at my view of the family calendar, and I can see at a glance that my wife has a doctor's appointment, that my kids have, you know, my son's got his dance, my daughter's got some horse show. I see what appointments I've got scheduled at work, and I've got it right there at my fingertips. It's on my phone. It's on my computer. It's always open. That's been a huge boon for me. And, and I do get upset if somebody has something scheduled that I need to know about, somebody in my family, and they haven't put it into the calendar. I tell them, you know, doesn't exist for me if it's not in that family calendar. Right. I don't care where you put it in that family calendar, but just as long as we can all see it, then it's real. If it's not there, it's not real. I will not remember, because I don't want to have to remember every appointment that's scheduled, every class that has to happen, every meeting that I've got with somebody. I want it just to be there. And then I have, because of the way Google calendars work, I have notifications pop up on my phone, you know, 15 minutes before a meeting at work. So I've got enough time to finish up what I'm doing and get to the place I've got to be. You know, a day before various kind of event, a lecture that I want to go to or a concert or something, you know, so I have different classes of notifications, different lengths, and it's been working really, really nicely for me for a few years. You could do that. You wouldn't have to necessarily do that with Google Calendar. You could do that with whatever other calendar system you've got. But again, the sharing between these different things for the people in the family, that works great. We do a similar sort of thing here at work, using our email calendaring messaging application called First Class. I don't like it. Every time there's something in there that pertains to me, I copy it out into my personal calendar. But again, it's like using Outlook or Exchange, rather. It works, you know, and that's what you were saying before, is find something that works. So for me, that's the big one. How about you? What do you use for a calendar?
Because I'm an Apple person, I've got all Apple products. I just use the Apple calendar. But here's the catch. I also have like five different Gmail addresses or companies that are built on the Gmail platform. And I bring all those into the same calendar because my biggest problem with using the Google Calendar as an app on my phone was originally early on, Google wasn't playing very well with Apple and the notifications weren't what I wanted. And and the integration just wasn't there. I'm huge on integrations now. I like things that talk to other things. And on an Android device, Google Calendar probably talks to everything because it's Android. So if you're using that, that's probably the way to go. On my iPhone, I brought in the Google Calendars that are associated with the email addresses I had into my regular calendar setup. So they show up as a different color. And because of that, it's kind of funny you're talking about duplicates. So my wife and I, we have our shared family calendar. That's an Apple calendar. I have my APN calendar, which is, it's for now my primary calendar, because that's what I've tied to another tool I'm going to talk about in a minute. And if that tool is going to allow people to schedule appointments, then I need to have everything on the APN calendar. So all the other stuff I have, I might have it on a different calendar because it's pulling from a different source, but I also have to duplicate like an event on the APN calendar because this scheduling tool can't read the other calendars. It can only read one at a time. So I'll have duplicate events all over the place. And I have a couple other apps that bring in, they're not really events. They're really, they look like calendar appointments, but they're really more of like a timed reminder that says, hey, this thing is due at this point, but it shows up as a calendar event. So I might have in one time slot, like three different copies of the same event because they're on different calendars, because those calendars are talking to different services. So yeah, I have that, but yeah, the regular Apple calendar. And I like it because if I'm in an email or if I'm anywhere on the platform, even in another app, most of the time, and somebody says, you know, hey, do you want to meet on September 1st at 2 PM? I can hover over that or click on it. And it's smart enough to read that and say, do you want to make this an event in your calendar? And then add it to a calendar. It's like, yeah, let me do that. I don't have to do anything special. It just does it automatically. So yeah, Apple Calendar just integrated with, I think I've got probably 6 or 7, maybe even 8 different calendars that come into there. And then I sort of consolidate everything into the one primary one that I use. So yeah, pretty simple. I've seen lots of different calendar apps out there. But again, integration is the key to me. If it doesn't talk to other things, then it may as well just be a paper calendar as far as I'm concerned. And Google Calendar, if you do use, I know that does talk to a lot of other things, especially if you're in the Google universe, you know, and you're using all those, the Google suite of products. It's pretty great there. Plus you can start a Google Hangout straight from a calendar appointment, and it comes with its automatic link. It's all pretty sweet. But all that also works in the Apple calendar side for your Google calendar. So, you know, it's still, there's most of the functionality is still there.
Well, for Google Calendar, back to that, on the on my computers, I use the web interface for it because I like it best. I do have my calendar app, the built-in Apple calendar app on my computers will sync to the Google Calendar, but I don't use that as my primary interface. On my phone, I use the built-in calendar app on the iOS, and it's only showing me Google Calendars.
Yeah.
And it works beautifully. I add events, I add appointments right there on my phone. Mm-hmm. They show up on the web. So it's very seamless from that aspect, getting data in and getting data out and be able to look at it and get the same information, which is important. Whether I look at it on the web or I look at it on the iOS app or on the Mac app.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to anymore, I think, go all in with just one service. Mm-hmm. You can mix and match and do certain things from one place and certain things from another place because they do talk to each other much better than they did even 2 years ago. But you can also get yourself in a bind if you spread yourself, one calendar over here, one calendar over there, one calendar another place, and you never know which is really the master.
Right.
So, that's just that's a caveat.
I think we'll round out this calendar discussion and in this first segment by talking about automatic schedulers. So the one that I use is called Calendly, and it's just Calendly. There's Acuity Scheduling, and that's another one of the big ones, and there's a handful of other ones out there. And I think I've probably talked about Calendly all this before. If you want to see how it works, go over to arcpodnet.com/archaeotech and look on the right side of the page. There's a link called Schedule an Interview. And I set up a particular event for Archaeotech because we have a recording time that we like to stick to. It's a 2 p.m. every other Tuesday. And so the only thing you can choose is 2 p.m. every other Tuesday. If you want to record it at a different time, we'll talk offline about that, right? We'll talk on email and say, okay, let's find a different time because we really want to talk to you. But ideally, we like to secure our calendars and make sure that, we're not overtaxing ourselves and record that. So I set up this Calendly event that basically says just that. The other nice thing is I can have questions. I can ask you questions when you schedule, say, hey, give us a short bio. What are we going to talk about? All that stuff. I can send you to our guest page at the very end of it that says, here's what you need to consider for the recording. And all those things. Plus, Calendly will send us both reminders leading up to the event. It'll send, if you pay a little more for it, it'll send text reminders, but I think the email reminders are good enough. So it'll remind you leading up to the event. Plus, in every email reminder, and there's not that many, there's only a few, but in every one, there's a chance to cancel or reschedule. So if you want to reschedule, it'll send me a notification that the event was canceled and rescheduled, and then I'll get a new event type new reminder for the new one. And all that goes right onto my calendar automatically. It goes onto my APN calendar that I use. So the only downside to Calendly, and I guess they figure people use one primary calendar and they're probably right, but the only downside is you have to link it to a Google Calendar because that's what they've decided to use for their API. And like I said, most people have a Google Calendar if you have a Gmail address, but so you have to link it to a Google Calendar, but you can only link it to one. If I can link it to like five of them, it's looking at all those calendars, it really save you a lot of time. But I've had to do some workarounds. Like, for example, I was at a conference this weekend that had nothing to do with the Archaeology Podcast Network, but I had to block off. I had to put in an appointment I call schedule block for those 5 days. So nobody scheduled over the top of that. And it's just a big, huge block called schedule block, and it goes over the top of all the stuff I'm doing. So nobody could use any of the number of event types I have to schedule a time slot during that time. So it takes a little bit of work on your part to really curate your calendar and make sure you've got all your stuff in there. Like you can book 60 days out, I think, on most of my appointments. So I've got some travel planned in October, and I've already blocked out all that just so somebody doesn't schedule an appointment with me over the top of those things for all the other stuff I'm doing. So yeah, it's pretty great. I love it. It saves me a ton of time because there's nothing more than I hate than seeing an email that says, hey, what time should we meet? My God, there's 15 emails before you even land on a day, let alone a time, right? So yeah, this is just easy. If it's available for me, it's available for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to mention that another very similar sort of service is called You Can Book Me, and a lot of our teachers here use it. We have a thing called labs in our school's philosophy. It's basically like office hours, and so students want to be able to schedule a lab in their terminology, with the teacher to meet or to discuss something, to go over homework or whatever. And so the teachers will link their school supplied Google Calendar up with You Can Book Me, and the teacher and the students then can just go and look up a teacher and sign up for a particular appointment slot. And so that works really well. A lot of the teachers really like it. I haven't used it myself because that's not the way I work, but, you know, for fairness sake, it'd be another one worth looking at if scheduling appointments is something that's important to you.
Nice.
How about we take a little break and come back and talk about maybe some of the ways that we keep track of individual tasks as opposed to maybe the broader view of calendars.
Sounds good. Back in a second.
Hey, podcast fans and digital archaeologists. Have you heard about WildNote? It's a data collection app that works online or offline on your smartphone or tablet, iOS or Android. It allows you to collect field data easily, manage data efficiently, and generate data reports and site records effortlessly. We have a growing list of state site forms built in for your use and some generic forms that will work anywhere. Check out the shovel testing and photograph forms. You can get a free all-access 30-day trial today by going to wildnoteapp.com. That's wildnoteapp.com for your free 30-day trial. Now back to the show.
All right, welcome back to episode 87 of the Architect Podcast, and we're talking about workflow stuff, getting things done, you know, project management type things, using a bunch of different apps. So the next one that I have on the list that I wanted to talk about that I use extensively for everything. In fact, I think I spent 20 minutes introducing it to my Civil Air Patrol squadron last night at our meeting because I found some ways that I want to use that for our squadron. But I've got probably 60 to 80 boards on this thing, but it's called Trello, T-R-E-L-L-O. And to describe it, basically, imagine like a big cork board with columns on it, okay? And on those columns, you have post-it notes. And those columns might say, you know, ideas, you know, in development or working on, you know, needs review, and then completed, left to right. And then you have a post-it note that's, here's an idea, thing I want to do, a to-do list thing. That post-it note goes in the left column. And then as you finish up things on that post-it note that are listed on it, you move it to the right. So top down, left, right. That's how that goes. And that's how you can think of Trello. It doesn't need to be used that way. You can just use the columns or the list as their own silos of things that you're doing. That's not the most efficient way to use Trello, but I do actually use it that way for certain things. But mostly it's for project management in a way where it's top down, left, right. Now on those Trello cards, you can drop video files, audio files, you have checklists, you have comments, you have links to other things, links to other Trello cards. The ability to relate two Trello cards to each other is something I use all the time. And to go from there, one of the things I also love about Trello is its integrations. You can have integrations between Trello and Google Drive, Dropbox, your calendar, lots of different things. If I put a due date on a Trello card, it shows up as a block on my calendar, the calendar that I use for everything. So if I've got a due date on there, it just shows right up on there. Now, I don't have it go to that same calendar that I use for scheduling, because usually this just shows up on my calendar to show me I have something due. It's not an actual event. It's just something that I'm going to list there because I look at my calendar all the time. So that's basically Trello. I use Trello and I integrate it with Slack, which we'll talk about in a minute. I integrate it with my calendar. I integrate it with Dropbox. I integrate it with Google Drive. And more importantly, I use Trello now, and I integrate it also with another app called BrainToss, which we'll also talk about in a minute. But more importantly, Trello is now my to-do list. And I used to use Apple Reminders. I used to use a couple other list apps that I don't even remember the name of anymore. But Trello is now my to-do list. So I have a master Trello board that has my master to-do list on it. And since you can relate cards across boards, I'll have this master list of things I want to do that I just, when I'm driving or walking or just sitting here, and I think, man, this would be really great to do. I just open that up. I add a Trello card and I forget about it. I toss it out of my brain. That's what brain toss is for. But I get rid of it. So then when I'm ready to do it, I'll pull it over to the doing column, and then I'll link that to its parent card on the actual board that goes on, because my to-do list is everything. So I'll link it to an APN board or a CAP board or a, you know, DigTech board or whatever the case may be. And then I could go from there. And this also goes to my calendar. And then For some things, like on the APN, it goes to, there's a notification that pops up in a Slack channel that says, hey, this thing was done to this Trello card. And that way I have all my bases covered. So that's basically Trello. And I don't know if we want to talk about my hatred of list apps right now, or if you have a comment on that, Paul.
Let's talk about your hatred of list apps, because you've got a very specific reason and you've hinted at it a few times here already. Just, I'll leave it out that I'm not so down on list apps or lists. And then we can go into it after that.
So list apps, in case you don't know what we're talking about, it's basically just, you know, an application, usually on your phone or something, where you can just keep lists of things. And honestly, some people live and die by lists. I mean, that is just their thing. And they love the list apps. And I'm just saying, they don't work for me. I've tried lots of different things. But the biggest problem I have with list apps is those listed items, they don't integrate with anything. So I have to go to that application and physically look at it, which might sound like, okay, why don't you just go to that application and physically look at it? I was like, well, it's just not in my brain. It's not in my workflow. You know, I don't see it on my calendar in the morning that says, do this. I'd have to create a separate calendar appointment that says, here, look at your list app, because I live and die by the calendar and everything integrates with that, except most list apps. Now, some of them are a little more robust than others, but when you get up into these ones that might have heavier integration, at their core, they're still just a list. They're just still just notes. So I want something that does a little more than that. And that's why I use Trello. So I can use it as my lists. You know, I have the actual list and then I have checklists within those cards. And then I can add a bunch of other stuff there. You know, I can add some research and some other stuff. And it's just like a list app on steroids that you can also do project management with. And that's why I like it. So I guess I want a little more from my list app than just a list of things to do that are pretty colors and do different things. So I don't know. That's what I got. But you sound like you use list apps and you like them, or lists.
I use lists. List apps, I've tried a bunch. Let me back up here. About 12 years ago, also in the summer, I had gotten the letter from my department saying, you know, you have to turn in your PhD like pronto, or we're going to kick you out. And so I had, you know, I had the final push to finish writing, and it was also, working at the school, getting ready for the school year. I was absolutely, completely overwhelmed, crushed by the number of things I had to do and keep track of. And a lot of them, especially the work side of it, was projects. Things had to be done A before B before C, you know, and it was not just myself. It was also when, because there's construction going on in the schools, when I could move into a certain classroom to wire it up, when we could get access to certain parts of the building so we could make sure the network was good. You know, and then all the stuff that you have to do with writing a dissertation, which is, you know, you got to get each chapter done, proofread, you got to make sure that all your citations are good, and on down the list. And so I was absolutely horribly overwhelmed. I started dipping my toes into a whole bunch of different techniques, really, for dealing with that sense of being overwhelmed. A lot of what I was looking at were list apps, and I tried a whole bunch. I wrote a couple programs of my own that I used for a little bit. The basic idea was, like you've said, to just get things out of my brain and then onto something. For the project management, I used a couple different Gantt chart kind of programs. And for me, they never really stuck. For some people, especially people who work like in construction, it's a big part of the project management is using these Gantt chart apps. But it didn't really work for me. I read at that same time the book "Getting Things Done" by David Allen, which was really big amongst techies, 10, 15 years ago, and I tried to apply some of his ideas. I thought that it was a little overwrought and very kind of fetishizing folders and label makers and all sorts of crazy stuff. And it was very analog too. You know, you file your things in folders and then you look at the folders every day. And I'm sure that would make your skin crawl, Chris, because I think you'd much rather have those folders be virtual and have them send you the reminders. But I did get some stuff out of it. And I used, amongst the various list apps, one that stuck with me for a couple years was a web-based app called Remember the Milk. I liked that one quite a bit. Since then, I find that I don't really need the list apps so much. I do have a couple lists. I've got Apple Reminders, which I use very heavily. I use it at work for everything that I've got to get done. I just put it in one pile that's everything that I've got to do at work. You know, remember to fix the UPS in IDF5 because the battery's complaining that's worn out. And so I put it there and I take it off when it's done. and I do get satisfaction from taking things off of that to-do list, which is actually a big part of the to-do list. I also use Apple Reminders for a couple of things. Sometimes, you know, I've mentioned plenty of times that I bounce back and forth between the city, between New York City and Brewster, New York, which is an hour north. And lots of times I want to remember to do something right when I get to whichever location. And so I'll set up a geofence as a reminder. When I get to the house, it'll pop up a reminder, hey, remember to check, you know, that something is running properly, for example. That's pretty useful. That's available to me there in Apple Reminders. And then I also use it for things that happen periodically. So every year I've got a reminder at the start of the month that I've got to get, you know, the start of whatever particular month, that I have to get the cars inspected by the end of that month. The start of every month, I have a pop-up that tells me that I have to give the dog his heartworm medication. You know, so things that are regular and whatnot, I use that in Apple Reminders. And, you know, aside from work where I put every last little project in there, I also use it for some of the bigger, longer term projects. Refinish the kitchen, you know, just as a top level reminder. But then other lists, I use actually just checklists like in Apple Notes app.
Yeah.
For the day-to-day stuff, you know, it's a weekend and I want to remember mow the lawn, fix the squeak on a door, you know, go to Trader Joe's, whatever. I'll put all those on. Sometimes I'm ambivalent. I'll use that in Apple Notes. Sometimes I'll do that just on a piece of paper. So I'm not against the idea of list apps, but aside from those automated timed or location-based things that I use Apple Reminders for, I don't have any problem going to that list because it's a short-term thing. It's not a recurring event. It's not something I'm really going to forget. Yeah. It's just something I might forget today, you know? So I carry that list in my pocket, either on my phone or on a scrap of paper. So, you know, it works really well for me because I just, everything gets dumped down to the list out of my brain. And then I, you know, I check one thing off. I look, what's the next thing here? Oh, I could do this right now. And I attack that one. But again, that's different than I think what you're lying about the list apps, because a lot of them seem to suggest that they're going to get your whole life in order.
Yeah.
And I think that when you're dealing with a list that's going to get your whole life in order, you have to either do like what you're saying with Trello, just jump in and have the integrations that push to your calendar, push to your notifications, push all over the place so that it can stay on top of it for you. Or else have a system that is independent of that. And that's more the way that I go. Lists, the big thing that you have to watch out for, and I think that most anybody that works with this will tell you, is that don't have too many lists.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have too many lists, you forget where they are and you start thinking about which lists a particular task should go into. And that's not helpful because then you have to have a list of where your lists are.
And that's a lot of those, really complicated list apps. They do, even the Apple Reminders and Apple Notes, you know, when you look at your list of notes or your list of reminders, like you have today and you have, I have reminders for home, reminders for work, reminders for whatever, that like structure outside, that's basically a list of lists. And that's where your head just explodes.
That's a problem. And that they give you that up front, I think leads to people getting overwhelmed and dropping them. And so again, my system is extremely Spartan now after having gone through that, getting things done, the Byzantine system that David Allen proposed. I whittled it down. And now I just have this nub of a system, but it works really well for me because, if I wake up in the middle of the night with some idea or something I'd forgotten about, I jot it down quickly and go back to sleep. I don't sit there thinking about it. Get it out of the brain.
That actually is a great segue into the next app I want to talk about, which is called Brain Toss. Mm-hmm. And I just heard about this weekend and downloaded it on Saturday. I already put it on my Apple Watch and it's on my phone. And I've used it, I don't know, probably 8-9 times a day since I got it on Saturday. And I'll probably use it even more. But what this is it's exactly that. It's getting it out of your brain. And that's why they call it Brain Toss. It was a perfect name for this application. And it's also super simple. So I have the iOS version. I think it's $199. And it's just got three buttons, and I can choose kind of what I want the default to be when I first open the app. So it's the fewest clicks as possible so I'm not taken out of a conversation for too long. But the guy that introduced me to this, you know, we're sitting there having a conversation. We're talking about this conference that we're trying to plan for the end of October. And I'm mentioning some things to him, and he just kind of puts his hand up, you know, says, wait a minute, pulls up his phone, and in maybe 2 seconds, you know, he's got his phone unlocked. It's on his front page and it's already recording his voice. And he basically just records himself saying, remind me to do this and blah, 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 blah. And what that does for him is that takes that recording, transcribes it into words, which doesn't always work, but at the very least saves the recording and then sends that to what he calls his inbox list on a Trello board. And that creates a new card for that thing. So now he can go and the title of that card is the, I've noticed, often poorly translated text that it has. But the more important thing is the MP3 file is there, so you can quickly listen to it. Oh, right, that's what that was. Retitle the card and put it where it needs to go. You know, sort it to where that idea needs to live. And you can also use the image thing and take a picture of something. If you take a picture of a business card, it will read that business card and then title the post. It knows it's a business card because of the shape. It'll title that card with the person's name and occupation and stuff like that, whatever's on the card. You can also just do a note. You can just pull it up and type in a quick note and hit send. And then that also goes to the same place. The way this does all that is in the settings, you basically set up an email address. So you could just have this go to your email if you want. Maybe you set up a special email address just for these reminders or something so it doesn't cloud up with your normal email. Or maybe it just comes into your email inbox if that's how your brain works. You want to see that as an email thing. Maybe you're very inbox zero based. So when you see a note that you left yourself, you'll deal with it immediately and put that on a calendar or do whatever it needs to happen. With Trello, each board has its own post to this board email address by default. So, and when you set up that Trello email address, you just click in Trello. Where's my email address for this board? It'll say, okay, well, we'll give you that, but where do you want these things to go? Which list do you want them to go on? So it'll create a new card, either at the top or bottom of the list, you can choose in that board automatically when you get an email sent to it. The other cool thing is in Brain Toss, you can set up multiple emails for that to go to. So let's say you want it to create a Trello card, but you also want it to go to your email inbox. So then you can see it right away. And then remember, oh yeah, I've got a Trello card that I need to work with to make that happen. On my Apple Watch, it's just got the little things in the corner are called complications. I don't know why, but they just like acknowledge the fact that it's impossible to figure out, and they called it complications, I guess. But I've got a little Brain Toss app icon and I just tap on it. A little thing comes up. I tap on that and now I'm recording. And when I record, I hit stop on my Apple Watch and I hit send, and that creates a Trello card based on what I just said. So if I have an idea, something I just can't deal with right now, I don't want to pull out my phone, I don't want to do anything with it, I just quickly record it there. And then, you know, several times a day, I go to my to-do list Trello board and I see what's going on for the day. And I was like, oh yeah, I just made that. I'd completely forgotten about it. And then I create that card, I edit it, and I put it where it needs to go and go from there. So I love it. Best $2 I've spent in a really long time.
Yeah, it looks really nice. The simplicity of it looks really cool.
Oh, yeah.
And with those integrations, I'm going to have to download that and play with it myself. I've never heard of it before.
Me either.
But that's... And it says it's been around for 5 years.
Right.
But that's exactly in the spirit of how to get these things done. You know, pick your best tool, and it looks like it has hooks into a lot of different tools.
Mm-hmm.
And get things out of your brain onto the to-do list, and then off that to-do list as quickly and efficiently as possible.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, that's the end of this segment. Let's come back and wrap this up with a few other tools. We'll see how many we get through. We'll probably link to a whole bunch of stuff that we didn't even talk about, just so you guys can see it. But so go check out those links on the show notes. But for now, we'll take our last break and we'll come back and wrap this up. Back in a second.
This network is listener-supported. We're trying to move away from paid advertising while also creating new shows and supporting the ones we have. The APN has never and will never make a serious profit on our podcast. Every little dime we make goes back into the network and improving show quality. So become a member today at www.arcpodnet.com/members to show your support, get some extras, and be a benefactor for archaeological education. Members get stickers, a coffee mug, a t-shirt, bonus content, early access to episodes, a private Slack team to talk to other members and the hosts, and full access to training on Team Black over at arccert.black. So check out our memberships at www.arcpodnet.com/members today and support archaeological education. That's www.arcpodnet.com/members. Now back to the show.
Hi there. Welcome back to Archaeotech, episode number 87. We're talking about getting things done and workflows for how we deal with the crushing, overwhelming workload of things that we have to do and remember to do and take care of and project management and all of the above. I just wanted to put in a little bit of a plug here. I don't know if that's the right term, but you'd mentioned in the last segment, Inbox Zero. That's kind of a philosophy that I like. If you ever see my desk, there's nothing on it. There's the computer and the tabletop. And Inbox Zero is kind of doing the same thing with your inbox. The goal is to have no emails sitting in your inbox. And the idea behind it is that people tend to use their inbox as a to-do list, right? Their email inbox, somebody says, hey, could you look up something for me? Could you help me with whatever? Or a friend emails and you have that reminder sitting in your inbox. Oh, I should email back. I should do this. I should do that. And what happens is that your email then, your inbox becomes daunting. You don't want to look at it. It strikes fear in your heart. So Inbox Zero is you either delete them or you file them away. So I use a modified version of that. I don't want to leave my to-do list in my inbox. I move it out to one of my other lists and then I file away that email. And so this is, I think, for me at least, and I think probably for a lot of other people, a healthy way of dealing with emails. Just tag them, put the to-do in whatever list you have, you know, respond to Bill.
Yeah.
Look up something, remember to renew the whatever, put it in a different list so it's not sitting there in your inbox, and then your emails look like real emails and you can have a healthier relationship and be less stressed out whenever you look at that email. So I just wanted to mention that very quickly in passing. I don't know if you subscribe to anything like that either, but I wouldn't be surprised since you do have your very elaborate organization through Trello.
That you're using. Yeah, I do actually, because I have so many emails that come in from different email addresses. If I didn't do something like that, I would go absolutely insane. You know, I mean, I can go, if I go a day without even checking my email, because I'm at a conference or doing something busy that takes me out of it. I mean, I'll have like 90 things in there that I've got to look at and check and resort and put away. And one thing I'm very bad at doing is unsubscribing. When I somehow get subscribed to something, I'm more likely to just delete that email rather than hit the unsubscribe. Yeah. But I need to unsubscribe because that, you know, I just don't need the info. Indeed. I do try to do that. I think it's better for your frame of mind and your peace of mind. So, all right. Well, let's keep moving on. So Slack is the next thing we have here. And this is really for, this isn't so much for your personal organization, especially if you're just a member of a Slack team. If you're like running a business or running a project or something like that, and you have people under you that you're trying to communicate with, Slack is a really great way to do that. And so for me, it helps out. Again, I'll go back to, say, Civil Air Patrol or even the Archaeology Podcast Network. You know, I create these channels that are related to certain topics. For the podcast network, there's a channel for each one of the shows. And, you know, for Civil Air Patrol, there's a channel for each different officer position and structure within the organization. And then I can monitor what's going on in these channels. You know, I can see people having the conversations. They're not doing it over email that I can't see. They're not doing it over text messages that I can't see. They're doing it on Slack in the channel that they should be having that conversation in. Now, that doesn't mean they can't have private conversations. Of course, they can do direct messages in Slack, but they have these conversations typically about the subject in the channel. And then as a manager, I don't have to micromanage. I can just observe it and say, okay, yeah, they're getting all that stuff done. And if I have to comment, then I'll comment. If I don't, I don't. The other thing I like about Slack is that Slack also has heavy integrations. And you'll notice that's kind of the theme to my desire for all these things to work is for them to work together. That's why I wanted an iPod when they first came out. You know, I wanted something that was, or really an iPhone. I wanted something that was music and phone and, you know, I could access the internet and do all these things all in one device. You know, I didn't want to have a bunch of things to carry with me. So Slack has all these integrations. A couple of the ones that I use is the Google Drive integration. So when somebody shares a Google link with you, it has some special tools for you to be able to actually work with that. There's Trello. I integrate Slack and Trello. So for the APN, when I have somebody working in a board for the APN and they're checking things off a list or moving cards from one list to another, all of those actions are recorded with a date and timestamp and a user ID in Trello. And I've set it up so that actually goes to a special Slack board. It goes to a special Slack team, and I've got those channels broken down based on the episode where things go. And I get zero notifications from that. I don't need notifications from it. When I go to Slack and I see that there's unread things in that thing, I'll go over there, I'll check it out, say, okay, this got done, this got done, this got done. You know, that's really cool. And I see when it got done. You know, did it get done on time? Was it late? You know, stuff like that. And I see that, so I don't have to actually micromanage, but I also don't get, you know, blasted with notifications because it's not something I need to know this second. I just can go over and check it. It's a record of what was done, and there we go. And conversely, you can also interact with Trello boards from Slack, although I find that a little bit more cumbersome than just going to Trello. I'm not sure why you would go that direction. I like the fact that Trello comes into Slack and goes that way rather than Slack going into Trello. So that's how I use Slack, and Slack has a ton of other integrations, especially if you pay a little bit more money for it. You can do all kinds of stuff. Again, you don't want to overdo it. You only want it to integrate with things that you're actually integrating with. You know, and I've tried different integrations and tools in Slack, and they just didn't work out. You know, it just didn't push my buttons. You know, it just didn't work out for me, so stopped using it. But Slack itself is an invaluable resource for me. Paul, had you used Slack before I brought you onto the APN team?
Only very infrequently. There's a Mac administrators Slack team that a couple of us here at work have joined, but I never had any real reason to go into it. One of my coworkers uses it pretty heavily. Whenever he has questions, he'll go on there and throw a question out, and people will respond. But for me, it felt just a little too much like a bulletin board. You know, the old BBSs, and so it didn't answer any particular problem that I was having. I mean, I do enjoy the APN Slack channel, especially on the members side of it, where we get some discussions about various topics. And it's not so siloed the one that you and I use, and we use it fairly frequently. I mean, we use it for planning all the time. But it's very much targeted just towards, you know, the Archaeotech podcast and who are we going to try to get on for an interview and what topics do we want to discuss and so on. The members side tends to be a little more broad ranging, the kinds of discussions that pop up there. And, you know, so that's interesting. But no, I hadn't used it. And aside from the APN, because we're dispersed geographically, I don't have a strong attraction to it for how it would help my workspace, my workflow. Though I do know that a lot of tech teams use it very heavily. Yeah. You know, even if they see each other face to face daily.
Yeah, it really is too, the dispersed teams that are really, it's really good for. Like, again, Civil Air Patrol, we were doing so much over like email and text message, it was just hard to manage and contain, you know. But now everybody's on Slack and it took a little while, but that's where everything goes. You know, we can drop documents over there and do all kinds of stuff. But even here at the Reno Collective, where I have office space, there's a Reno Collective Slack team, and it's not used as much because most of the people here don't actually work with each other. They just are at separate companies that happen to have office space here. So, but we use it for, honestly, the most important thing is when somebody brings brownies or cupcakes or something and leaves them in the lunchroom, then we all know about it immediately because they put it on Slack. So that's really, you know, but But anyway, you know, there's different things for like jobs. There's a lot of freelancers here. So if somebody says, hey, there's a job over here for doing this, they'll put that up in there. And it's just a nice little chat room kind of thing for the organization. So I'm not sure how you would use it to interact with all the other people at your school. Probably there would be an IT channel and it would just be blowing up with teachers saying, come fix my computer.
Yeah, as it is, we have an email, a conference email that we get all those messages from, or phone calls.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it doesn't really fit into the culture here at school because we've been doing the same thing for 25 years.
Yeah, well, that's the other idea with all this. If it's not broke, don't fix it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, all right. So moving on, we got a few other things to talk about. Some of them are going to be short and obvious, but others you may not know about. If you happen to have an Apple computer, one of the things that I know I don't utilize nearly enough is the Mac Automator. And if you just type in Automator, it'll come up with this little robot guy. And it takes a minute to kind of figure out how to create what I call like basically recipes. You take all these things and you just have it do stuff, but you can do some pretty amazing things. And one of the most helpful things for me, again, it's one of those things that saves me only a few seconds a day, but that adds up when you're doing it every single day, is you can create applications that do things on your computer. So I created an app for my desktop computer called Start My Day. I could have called it anything I want. And honestly, I just could have called it Start because I type in STAR and it just comes right up and I don't have to type the whole thing. It's also on my desktop. But what that does is it opens up the, I think, 6 programs that I want to see the minute I turn on my computer, you know, and I don't turn off my computer that often, but I do turn off those apps when I leave, because if notifications come over those and for some reason the screen came on or something like that, the cloud systems are usually smart enough to know that if a notification was on one screen and it's reasonably certain that you saw it because the screen's on, it won't send it to my phone or anything else. It's like, done. Job done. We got to you. But if I shut off those apps on my computer, then I'll get my notifications when I'm away from the desk. But anyway, it turns on Slack. It turns on my iMessage. It turns on my calendar. And then Trello and email. And I think those are the five things. Now, of course, I could go through and hit turn on this app, turn on this app, turn on this app, turn on this app. But I just sit down and I hit start my day. Bam, it does all that stuff. Then I put away my backpack and I go get my coffee and I come back and my computer's sitting there with my screens up and everything's ready to go. And you can do a lot of stuff like that. You can have it do a lot of different things using the Automator, not just create an application that does stuff for you, but a lot of workflow type stuff. Like if you're constantly find yourself opening this, doing this to it, and then moving it here, and then doing this, you can create a small application or workflow that'll actually just automate that entire process. And you type a couple keystrokes and make it happen. So have you ever used that?
You just gave me an idea. No, I don't use Automator at all. I used to use AppleScript, which is kind of the engine behind Automator, but I haven't used that in a good decade now. But I was thinking about the starting the day. I've got login items set on my computer. Mm-hmm. So I log out at the end of the day. And when I come in, I log in and it opens up my web browser and opens up 3 specific tabs on the web browser and opens up my email and opens up messages and this and that. And it does that anytime I log in. You can log in on a Mac and hold down shift as it's logging in. It's not supposed to launch everything, but I've had mixed results with that. And so oftentimes what will happen is, you know, I've got the computer, you know, maybe for a weekend, I brought it home. It's a laptop, and I brought it home because I expect I'm going to have to do some maintenance on network stuff, and I want to log in, and I don't want everything to launch, and so I hold down that shift key, and everything still launches, and it takes, you know, an extra minute and a half to be able to use my computer versus what it should have taken. So I may look at changing those login items instead to an automator script like you were just describing. So then, you know, on most occasions I'll log in and nothing will happen, and then I'll just hit Command A or whatever it's going to be, and have it launch all my suite of regular work stuff.
Nice.
So yeah, that's something I'm going to try now.
Yeah.
Thanks for the idea.
Hey, no problem. There you go. So it's way more powerful than I even know how to use it too. There are so many different variables that you could apply to what the Automator does. And then the output, the export as well, is it doesn't have to be an application. It could be You know, it could be a hotkey combination or something like that that just does a bunch of things for you. So yeah, it's pretty cool. The nice thing about making it an application, though, is that when I made it an application, I saved that application in Dropbox, and then I open it up on my other computer. Because I have all those same programs, it just works. Yeah. So
that's cool.
Yeah, I don't have to do a certain workflow for that computer. It's an app. And theoretically, it would work on anybody's computer that had those programs. And I think it just skips a step if they can't find that program. Like if I deleted Slack, it would just skip it and move on to the next ones as an application. So for as far as opening goes, you can also do the same thing at the end of the day and close all your apps, which is also nice, because that, if you've ever seen Office Space, you know, hey, that ruined his entire weekend not being able to close those apps fast enough.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got a few minutes left. I just want to cover a couple more things. And these first two here are really for collaboration. Of course, you guys all know about Google's list of suite of products. I feel like you can really get overwhelmed with what Google has to offer, and you really need to drill down into what you're actually going to use and how you're going to use it. You know, between the big ones that people use, like Google Docs and you know, Google Drive, of course, for sharing files, and then Google Sheets to a certain extent. I don't think a lot of people use Google Slides, although I've been using it a lot more because, again, Civil Air Patrol, I did a 2-hour presentation last night, and I do a 1.5 to 2-hour presentation every 2 weeks. And at the end of the meeting, we have what's called officer reports. And I have about 12 different positions where I call on the ops officer, I call on the emergency services officer, the safety officer, to say, what do you have? And if they have anything to report, they basically just stand up and they tell the squadron what they have to say. Well, I use Google Slides now in our squadron Dropbox, and I shared that presentation with editing capabilities to all of them. So leading up to the meeting, they can just, and it's the same presentation every meeting, I just change it to meet the meeting's needs. And their slides never change at the end. So they just go in, they can add stuff to their slides, and I don't have to say, hey, send me information and I'll do it. No, I send them a link and they do it. If they don't have anything, they just stand up and tell the squadron. But if they have like a picture or a link to a video or text or bullet points, whatever they want to put up there, they can just do that at their leisure, and it comes over the squadron slide presentation that's on the screen. So that's a really handy way to use that. But again, with Google, there's probably way more you can find in the Google suite of things than you ever even knew existed. But just try things out and use the ones that work.
Have you ever used I know you don't like to-do lists, but have you ever used a to-do list in Gmail?
I have not. I don't actually log into Gmail very often. I often don't even know what the interface looks like because I use all my Google mails through Apple Mail.
Yeah, I do. On my personal computer, I use it through Apple Mail, which is why I've never used the Gmail to-do list. But but on my work computer, for whatever reason, I use the web interface. Mm. And so I see it there, but I never have bothered touching it.
Yeah. I have a friend who uses the Google suite of products pretty extensively, and I think he uses that. He also uses Google Keep, which I think is similar to that. It's more like a notes kind of thing. I don't really get it because I don't use it, but he loves it. He uses Google Keep for all kinds of stuff. But he's an Android guy. So yeah, again, just find what suits you, basically. Another collaborative thing that is, some people would disagree that it's collaborative at all, is Dropbox. Dropbox can be a real pain in the ass, don't get me wrong, but it is also a great place to, you know, store files, share files, you know, add people to your thing. It depends on your level of access, of course, and what you're paying for, but they have the ability through Dropbox now to work collaboratively on different documents as well, you know, and open, like for example, a Word document. If you don't have Office 365 and you're using an older version of Word or something, if that's in a Dropbox folder, well, it's updating in real time. So it's kind of a Google Docs kind of thing, but with a Word document, and it's updating. Again, it works okay. It's not the best thing. If you need a collaborative document, I'd probably just do it in Google Docs and then save it all over to Word if for some reason you need a Word document. But Dropbox does have that ability to a little more limited extent. And then moving through here, since we're out of time, Just Press Record is similar to Brain Toss, except it doesn't really go anywhere except iCloud on Apple. And I'm not sure where it goes on Android. But it's, again, it's a simple, simple, simple application that you can add as a widget on your iPhone. Or when you open the app, it's just a huge red recording button. Or on my watch, it's just a a button. And when I push it, it instantly goes into recording mode after it launches the app. And it saves that when I hit stop and sends it to my iCloud. So then I have it available in the cloud. The only reason I don't like it is because, again, like a to-do list, it forces me to go to the just press record folder in my iCloud and then do something with that audio recording that I made. It will transcribe it if I'm looking in the app, but I like the fact that BrainToss just goes to my Trello board, which is what I'm actually using. You know, it takes that step out for me of going to another thing in between the step where I do something to the item. So, but it can be fun. It does have really good transcription if that's something that you need and you're just like driving in the car and you have a smartwatch and you just want to hit bam, I want a thing and just speak into it, record your thing, transcribes it, and then you can access that later. I think we're pretty much out of time, but I'll mention just two last things. Nutshell is something we're using for contact resource management. So if you're doing sales or if you have to contact a lot of different people, I'm finding that it's a pretty good program. It can be hard to learn, but it's a pretty good program for managing all that. And then Asana, a lot of people use Asana for project management, primarily because they have a free version that works really well. And then you can pay for some slightly enhanced things. So finally, my last comment is I had a workflow idea that I tell you guys, just so you can see how I use this. And the process would be like, say, for a meeting or somebody I need to talk to. They use Calendly to have the meeting scheduled. Calendly will send an appointment to my calendar of choice and to the guest calendar of choice or whoever my meeting subject is. We can collaborate. If I have somebody that's coming in the meeting with me, we can collaborate in the meeting notes with Google Docs. Integrated with Slack for notifications, so you know somebody added something to the Google Doc, and then Trello for enhanced notes, I call it, so you can add a bunch of other stuff to it rather than, because if you add like pictures and stuff to a Google Doc, well, it's just like word processing a document. You've got to put it here and do this, but if I drop these notes in Trello, then it's just a picture that's sitting up there that I can go through or something else, and then store the different processes that we need for that, any documents and meeting notes, like I said, and then store all those interactions, if this is sales related or customer related, in something like Nutshell. So you can collect everything there. And then Nutshell has integrations out to all that other stuff. So that's a typical workflow. And it's only using 1, 2, 3, 4, really kind of 4 or 5 different applications, which all do a separate thing, only, but all integrate with each other. Only, I mean, honestly, you know, the fact that if I had to use all 5 of those separately, that would destroy me. But the fact that they integrate with each other in a process type workflow, that's what helps me use them. All right.
Wow. We covered a lot and we barely talked about archaeology.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. That's what I love about this podcast, because, you know, people in archaeology, they get together and talk and it's always about archaeology, but it's not about how do you actually do all this stuff. We have to look at outside industries to really make our profession work really well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm all for it. You got any final thoughts on all this?
No, other than what we'd mentioned a few times. You know, there's a dozen different ways to skin a cat, right?
Yep.
Find the tools that work for you, dig in on them a bit, and stick to them. Don't make it too complicated unless, like Chris, you like the complicated that's simple, because it all does it magically in the background. We didn't even mention, speaking of complicated but simple, we didn't even mention if this then that, IFT.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. That if that's your thing, holy cow, you can automate everything. Yep. But really, you know, or if you're like me and you go more or less minimalist, there's still a lot to be said about, you know, trying out some of these different techniques, trying out these different tools and seeing what works for you. But once you find that, just stick with it. Just, you know, dig in on that simplified or that complicated workflow, but use it so that you get things out of your brain, onto paper, into the computer, whatever it has to be for you. And then you can just check those things off the list. And that's honestly, that's what we do here in our crazy work schedule between work and all the side projects we've got. And I know that that's what you've been doing for a while as well.
Absolutely. So, okay. Well, I'm interested to hear what you guys have to say. You know, send us your thoughts on these and comments and let us know what you think about what we said and if you're using any things and how you're using it. So we'd love to love to hear how other people are doing stuff. And like I said, I heard about BrainToss from somebody who's using it and immediately downloaded and incorporated it into my workflow. It's just like, it hit my buttons for how I like to think and do things and get stuff out of my brain. Mm-hmm. But other things I've heard about, I'm like, I'll look at it, and it just didn't do it for me. So, and then that's how it's going to be for everybody else. So, all right. Well, we didn't have an app of the day. Instead, we talked about like 15 different apps. So the whole podcast was app of the day. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Paul. And thanks everyone else. And we'll see you next time.
Take care, Chris.
Thanks for listening to the ArchiTech Podcast. Links to items mentioned on the show are in the show notes at www.archpodnet.com/ArchiTech. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com and paul@lugal.com. Support the show by becoming a member at archpodnet.com/members. The music is a song called Off Road and is licensed free from Apple. Thanks for listening.
This show is produced and recorded by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle, in Reno, Nevada, at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.